you know, up front, which is very useful for us. Now the task is to deconstruct this language into something that the average American can understand. So,
mm-hmm. I mean, are, is the conference, is the audience going to be intellectuals or just?
Oh, the audience is going to be intellectuals. Okay. It's a symposium of by invitation only. So he wrote it for the audience at the symposium. I'm just saying, in terms of the long term, this analysis needs to be popularized, mm-hmm. which is excellent because he's taking on the whole field of sociology. I mean, and we've said this in our own way, basically saying that you know, the growth of hate groups is not strictly tied to the economy, because how do you explain the growth in the 1950s or in the 1920s, right. which, you know, at the time when America was relatively economically prosperous, or the reverse? How do you explain that during the 1930s there weren't any? I mean, that they weren't. They were on the decline instead of the increase. And so, right. and so he hits it heads on. I also particularly appreciated his stratification of the white supremacist movement, which I have to honestly say I had not thought of it that way. The lawyers and the professors, they joined the IHR, you know, the the farmers and shop owners. Yeah, yeah, and
the also tackling the assumed belief that skinheads are from broken homes.
You're right.
And, you know, and he did that real well.
Right. So he tackles all of the boogeyman that we have to deal with it in translating this stuff for mass consumption. And usually our boogeymen are come to us in the form of the media, who are both as ignorant and dogmatic as anybody you ever wanna. So they come to you with these preconceived ideas mm-hmm. about what is the reality, and then they challenge you to use facts to disprove them. You know, as opposed.
Did he break down the skin out there?
Yes, he did. And was it at the end?
Well, I mean, he brings up, as far as when he's breaking down class and the correlation to what groups they're in.
It was on page 8 in the second paragraph on that page. Basically, he just says that if skinheads come from broken homes, why would they have joined the left on 30 years ago and now they're joining the right?
Just this, compare the percentages. Mm-hmm. You know, what percentage of
Okay. So all of that was very good. Where I had some problems with what he said, and it isn't even what he said, it's how he said it. He made a fairly absolute statement that I think he thought was cute, but I actually think is questionable, is the statement in the middle of page 1 where he says the premier metaphysical devil in popular Western culture is the Jew.
Right. Yeah, he didn't talk about racism at all.
He never got to the black devil. See, I was wondering if he was going to do the Jewish devil and you were going to do the black devil.
But is he saying, I mean, he's saying that all other devils are put upon an image that was created for the Jew.
Well, see, he says it better later on, because he says that all conspiracy theories are structurally parallel to anti-Semitism. So that to me is a better statement of it. So, because not all conspiracy theories that animate the right have anything to do with Jews. I just can't, that's just a blanket statement. That, but see, now after having said that, I have to come up with an example, which one doesn't. And so I have to really rack the brains, probably.
Which one that doesn't have an anti-Semitic?
Yeah, that is not focused on Jews.
He names one. Well, he gives one example in here.
The verb.
Oh yeah, but see the birch are tongue-in-cheek anti-Semitic, so I think they are, they would fit the parallel. I mean, the anti-UNism does have an anti-Semitic parallel in it, because most of these bozos think that the UN is the puppet of Jews that are in fact the bankers, da da da.
Aid families.
Huh?
Aid Jewish families.
Yeah. So that's one. Let's talk about what other some conspiracy theories are that are out there, though. I mean, let's not also be totally blinded by the preponderance of stuff we've done on the militias, because they're just one set. Yeah, they're just one set of them, but then there's others out there as well. The hordes of brown and black immigrants.
Mm-hmm. Sperm banks being implanted with non-white sperm.
Mm-hmm.
Jewish doctors,
let's see, that's a parallel. We're looking for non-parallels
okay.
now.
Oh, okay.
But then that could also include Jewish. They consider Jews not white anyway, so. But it's more.
But see, I've never heard them say anything about fears of Jewish immigration. But they talk about brown and black immigration.
That's like.
Right. The only reason I brought that up because they call it the white genocide. Like that, they see it as an attack on whites by black people of color.
What?
Doesn't matter.
Abortion?
Right.
Oh,
but
yeah.
That's why. I mean, it has a Jew in there, but it's a side note.
But see, yeah, it's kind of like, but they see the Jewish doctors as the facilitators of the process.
Okay.
Just like they see the black civil rights movement as being a Jewish conspiracy in many ways. You know, and
I
not.
I thought it was a communist.
I guess that's the point, too.
Loretta, are you taking calls?
Yeah, who is?
Allie Cross. Crank Cross.
Okay. Not allowing agency of other. Yeah. Okay, hold on. I'll explain that in a minute. I just don't think it's safe not to take calls on a day like that. Loretta. Hi, Allie, how you doing? Yeah, I'm sorry, I'm gonna be out of town on the 29th and the 30th. I think that's when your thing is. Oh, I'm so sorry. Yeah, it really is. Mm-hmm. You're flattering. Okay, well.
I'll see.
I mean, just like somewhere where you
okay.
can touch
him. Yeah.
Okay.
In the house.
Okay. Dorothy, yes, we had a couple of students with us. Allie, can I call you back on this? Let me get your number again, because I'm in the middle of a staff meeting. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Okay, then. If I can think of somebody, I'll give you a call back. Bye-bye.
One thing when he was talking about the computer, conspiracy things, and I was wondering how he's going to compare the black and Jewish thing, is that some of the things that were conspiracies of blacks or African Americans or people of color are now considered truths in our society, like just crime, rape, physical violence. You know what I'm saying? All those things that were conspiracies back when, now we've sort of accepted them into the mainstream, so we don't consider them conspiracies anymore. I mean, at the point.
But are you talking about the mainstream acceptance of myths or what? Or that
I'm just saying
the myths have become facts?
No, I don't mean the myths have become fact, but now they're now perceived as truth. Like, if the conspiracy of the raping of white women by black men, right?
Now, seen as axiomatic now.
Right.
I mean, it's true, though.
Axiomatic.
Mm-hmm.
So you're preparing for the speech, I can tell.
I just want to learn these words.
You said like three big words.
Keep that thesaurus right here.
Yeah. I'm learning them. I don't use these words normally. I speak in ghettoese. yeah, so you're saying that my favorite phrase, through time and repetition, things that originated as conspiratorial myths that were conspiracy have become truths, or what, is widely accepted as truth.
Or you can even say constructed through the media as truths, right? I mean, every time there's a raping of a woman, it's by a man of color, we see his face. It's by a white man, we never know what race he was, or what he looked like. And you can say that in general, again, for the crime and the crime bill, right? I mean, and welfare mothers, right? Destroying our whole economic system, that would be a conspiracy.
And it does have some elements of Lenny's description of a conspiracy, which means that it's almost like an overwhelming supernatural force.
I like
the
that.
Criminality of blacks and the laziness and stuff. Like, nothing society can do can address this, because this is just an overwhelming, devilish,
right.
You know, not subject to physical laws kind of force.
Mm-hmm. Okay, that's the way. Because I find like the way he differentiated being a paranoid person and having a paranoid style. And mm-hmm. I like that. That was, you know, because it kind of. Calling someone paranoid, you know, it's like, you know, you said about gun nuts, and it just kind of writes them off. You can't, they're not just gun nuts. They have a lot of other things.
Well,
but,
what?
So, no, I just
what surprises me about this, though, is he is so convincing. Or seems to me making the argument that Hofstadter was just right on target until the very end. Then he says, oh, well, you know, things have changed now. And that was so puzzling to me. I had to read it twice because I just really...
I like
because
that,
he convinces me that Hofstadter has a clue. And then he says, well, but...
Give me the paragraph, I'm sorry.
On page 13.
Okay.
He's, since then, Hofstadter and other sociologists from that period that's passed the new generation.
Well, I'm not so sure. I think he was talking about Hofstadter as his generation, not Hofstadter as his set of ideas, because I think he's saying that Hofstadter's ideas have endured.
They've carried on through well.
Right, and he's saying, even if they've been surpassed, though, why do they hang on? And then he says, it might be cultural lag time. And then he says, it reflects our common sense understanding of political realities during the post-World War II or Cold War era, and then goes on to describe the difference between the post-World War II and the post-post-World War II.
Yeah, which really got cute.
Yeah, which just about lost me. And so I was really confused by that.
I think he himself, I'm guessing that he himself is still trying to work out how to apply his theories across just the historical time period.
Mm-hmm.
So your confusion might be related to his still working it out. Because I kind of felt he was a little bit ambiguous, but it's fine. I mean,
and then he says the post-post-war period is defined by ethnic, racial, blah, blah, blah. Which is great, but he doesn't really, that's kind of like thrown in at the end when he's, and he doesn't address that. I mean, he doesn't give evidence of it. We all know it's true, but he really doesn't give too much evidence of that.
Okay.
So I just was real confused.
So you couldn't tell in the end, first of all, whether or not he liked Hofstadter or not, or you thought you did, but then lumping him with the other sociologists.
And this whole time keeps saying, he's pretty convincing. He's kind of arguing for what Hofstadter said, I thought. Mm-hmm. So I was just...
The most important point, I thought, for me, in his using the Hofstadter, funny name, was... where he says the feeling of persecution is central. That I thought was interesting. I started to write before. He is saying about how we use paranoia in our everyday language, but if we look at, the ordinary white person would probably see Jews as being paranoid, overly paranoid, post-Holocaust. Would see African Americans as
Loretta.
Yeah.
Are you expecting more media people?
Yeah.
Okay, they're up in the lobby.
Would you bring them down for me?
Yeah.
Thank you.
I would think that the average white person would see the Jews as being overly paranoid about anti-Semitism, blah blah blah. They would also see African Americans being overly paranoid about the whole justice system and racism and blah blah blah. And then, but on the other hand, we're looking at we can use the militia, they're a perfect group to look at their perceived paranoia as being persecuted. I mean, they really feel like they're being persecuted by the government, right?
But they also are part of a larger belief system right. that is shared by an increasing number of whites right. that they are an endangered species.
Definitely. Mm-hmm. But the reality of that persecution for all those three groups obviously differs.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
The objective reality. Or like the Marxists would say, the material basis.
What I wrote is the simple way of saying it is that the human rights violations against those three groups differ.
All right. Oh, that's okay. A good way of putting it.
All right. And you can argue about statistics later, but.
Well, with the paranoid style, facts don't matter anyway. Except, to be the smaller the fact and the more you can accumulate, the more you can make these great leaps of logic that really don't make sense. Here we're going to do another interview while we suspend this one and then come back in a minute.
Hi,
I know you. I've seen you before.
That's right.
Hi, how you doing? Set up where you want to.
Okay.
Let's move. We're in the middle of a briefing trying to... There's something in it, and this is not formulated well enough for me to offer it as a critique, but there's something in it that has two major players in the world, the white supremacists and Jews, and everybody else is like incidental to the plot. So there's a denial of the agency of other people who aren't either white supremacists or Jews. I guess that's the point, and I'm not quite sure how to gracefully say that, but the entire world is not Jews at one end and white supremacists at the other.
Right, or Jews represent, it's not Jews and Gentiles. It's from a Jewish writer, it's that perspective that you see everything Jew or Gentile. I don't know if you want to say that to him publicly or not. That's really good. I thought a graceful way of saying that is by saying that white supremacists frequently cover all their bases, that they have internal, they demonize people who are internal to them, so they choose Jews, they're the internal whatever devil to the United States, but then blacks, Africans, and now African Americans are the external devil. That was part of the paperwork that we went through in the black Jewish thing. He's not going to agree to it in this paper, but if someone wanted to argue that women were the devils, you could argue that as well. It all depends on where the political agenda of different white supremacist groups lie. Mm-hmm. And it varies whether it's about where it's central on Jews and where it's not. I think he would agree that that white supremacists are very extensive in being able to, or they're very adaptable. But I guess what he's saying, their political agenda can be viewable to different victims.
So I just have a question. So he's saying the conspiracy theory may not be anti-Semitic, but it's taken from a model that wasn't. So,
And at that point, I totally agree with him, because what he's saying is something we actually said in Blacks and Jews. You read that, right?
Yeah,
long time ago, right? Okay. And that is, the model for oppression was perfected on the Jewish population, you know, by the dominant, I don't want to use the word Gentile.
White Christian.
Yeah, you know, white Christian. And it was a factor, it was a feature of the development of European nationalism that took place. And so his thing about conspiracy theories paralleling anti-Semitism, you know, is a restatement of that model development we talked about under Blacks and Jews. So to that extent, I think he's absolutely right. What the paper also didn't speak to is the characterizing of Jews as a race.
Right.
Which is essential for these conspiracy theories to sustain themselves. Because if they portray Jews simply as another competing religion, it would not work. It has to be a race that threatens the racial purity of the Aryan stock.
I remember, Marion, just the other day you read some quote that had something to do with Jews and blacks poisoning white society, and it used that word poison, which I thought was, do you remember that? Well, I guess it was 2 weeks ago.
Poison, I remember him saying whites who want to integrate, or is that the one? They're white outside, black inside, and Jewish
mind.
Think white, too. Yeah, Jewish mind.
Who is this?
Somebody.
It's in our.
We know well.
It's in our last thing of clips. I mean, it would be hard to find.
Somebody.
But there is.
I'd like to have that clip. Because when I do my response, I maybe need to use some quotes.
Yeah.
Need to back the up.
In general, I would say that, I mean, maybe he thinks that intellectuals are above that, but I mean, I think he needs to use more actual quotes from white supremacists. And if you're going to say that they demonize blacks and the Jews, then hold up the pictures. You know, pictures.
You know, he just kind of ignores blacks all the way through it.
Yeah.
I mean, what he really makes a great argument for the anti-Semitic angle, but just kind of
never got to.
Right.
Well, maybe it's a little gone. Maybe it's a reflection of a belief gone too far. Because, like I said, while holding that belief, and I am convinced that the model is anti-Semitism, that doesn't mean that every manifestation is based on anti-Semitism.
Mm-hmm.
See what I'm saying? Because I think that the various forms of oppression have their own energy. They have their own formation. They have their own historical origins.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so to say that something is based on the model doesn't mean that the model explains everything.
Right.
Mm-hmm. I don't know if I made sense of that statement.
No, exactly, because it's manifested in some new form now. So
right.
The model can't explain everything.
Mm-hmm. I mean, maybe I didn't react so strongly to that. I mean, I think that's his perspective. I guess it's good. I didn't feel a strong reaction to that, or very strong. I mean, I think that's his perspective. I kind of picked up on it. I guess I was just intrigued by a lot of the expansion that was going on.
Well, see, let's also back up and say, the purpose of this discussion is to offer a critique.
Yeah.
So it's not just to ingest and say this is great, but
oh, yeah.
And so
no,
we sound a little harsh is because it's the process of
writing.
Right.
Of this just knocked my socks off. But what I was going to say to you is, except that at the first sentence of the paper says the purpose of this paper is to demonstrate that racism and anti-Semitism are essential factors. And he did a wonderful job with the anti-Semitism, but didn't never addressed the racism, and so that was what my
in other words, he set himself up to say, I'm going to treat these things both of these things, but then he seemed to give disproportionate weight to one or the other. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah.
But it's a great segue for your paper.
But I get the sense that he started writing, and once he gets writing, he starts on anti-Semitism, and he just starts going on. And then he's found he's written too much, and he's only written a little, and he kind of wanted to stop, I guess. That's more of the sense, if he would just keep going on and on.
Well, actually, that's not how it happened for him. He wrote the middle, and then he wrote an introduction and a conclusion. So he created that opening line after the body of the paper was written. Remember that one you pulled off of PeaceNet?
Yeah.
That was the middle, starting from the...
Yeah,
and so one can say, you said you were going to say this at the beginning and you didn't prove it.
I took him at his word, the first sentence, and... So I kept looking for it, and then I was really disappointed because it wasn't there.
Well, it was anecdotally there because he talked about the syphilis experiment.
But it wasn't enough.
It's not explicit.
It just really wasn't.
I mean, if you read into it and understand that he's talking about models and not just anti-Semitism, but it's not explicit.
One of the things that maybe unconsciously he was something that he got confused about, because you can talk about anti-Semitism and talk about race and racism, but doesn't mean you're ever going to get to blacks. You know what I'm saying?
Oh, okay.
Okay, racism for African Americans or Africans is entirely different than it is for Jews, but he might be feeling self-conscious that you can actually talk about racism for Jews, because most people don't talk about anti-Semitism that way. And there's enough in this paper to only deal with that aspect than to pretend
because
to talk about
it. Because I thought he dealt with racism, but he just didn't talk about black people. That's what I felt like he was talking about. All David Duke and all these things were race-based, but he wasn't talking about black people. He was just talking about race.
But see, that's where my critique of it being Jew and Eurocentric comes out, because it just makes the victims of this process, the only true victims portrayed here are Jews.
Yeah.
And then you talk about the perps. Where's the rest of the world here?
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's why I was talking about the denial of the agency of the other people affected by this thing.
Yeah.
It's either Jews as victims of the conspiracy theories, or whites as perpetrators of the conspiracy theories.
Yeah.
Who else is in this picture?
Except for he names the Nation of Islam randomly.
I thought that was gratuitous. You know, I think it's legitimately in here, but why put it in here if you're not going to explain it?
Yeah.
If you're not going to explain it, why put it in here?
I don't
agree. I don't know. I used a big word. I think you start reading this stuff, and your language starts changing. You know, I gotta stop hanging around with these intellectuals. This is scary.
Just wait till you come back.
Okay, and that was the other thing. He didn't quote any black scholars who have done enormous work around conspiracy theories.
So yeah, just that's
why
I think
we
just kind of left it out.
But I think we've beaten that horse enough.
Yeah. Well, there was one other thing.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know whether it really belongs in this paper or not, but he doesn't talk it. Well,
I want to get the phone from the microphone.
What he says on page 13 under the little stars, Hostetter's thesis, assume liberalism was a permanent feature of American life and that right-wing movements were essentially revolts against progress. Well, maybe liberalism isn't a permanent feature, but he still hadn't made the argument with me that these right-wing movements aren't essentially revolts against progress. I mean, it seems to me like a lot of what's going on today is the backlash. Backlash to civil rights and the backlash to women's rights. And so, why isn't that a revolt against progress? I mean, these angry white guys with guns.
They have their own idea of progress, too. Prove your point stronger.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And so,
Well, see, there's 2 points. I agree with you. There's 2 parts of that assumption, though. First of all, the assumption of the that there's enough evidence to say that liberalism has been eclipsed as an ideology.
Right.
Yeah.
That part of it.
But that begs the question of whether liberalism was the ideology we wanted to pursue in the first place. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, I don't know if I want a world defined by liberalism.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think so. You know, something more on the progressive Marxist edge was more what I was looking for, not the liberal definition of the world. And actually, I had a phrase, because the problem with liberalism is that it's always successfully disguised as racism. It's more successfully hid as racism than the right wing. But that doesn't mean its racist edge is not there. So the pursuit of liberalism as an ideology, you know, I'm not so sure if that's a goal, is a worthy goal. And secondly, I'm not so sure its collapse is a bad thing.
Yeah.
You know, because...
As long as we have an alternative.
Mm-hmm. Well, it sharpens the contradictions. You know, one thing we old Marxists always believed was that shit had to get bad for people to get it. Mm-hmm. You know, and all the disguises have to drop. Because as long as there's disguises in people's way, they can't see the reality. Well, with the collapse of liberalism, you've just got the raw, naked right wing to look at. You know, and will that be better for people's overall consciousness? People will have to make up their mind, am I for this or am I against this? No longer standing in the middle saying, I'm against both extremes. You know? And I thought his deconstruction of extremism makes me never want to use the word again in life. You know?
Depending who you talk to, that, well, that's a common thing.
Come up with another word. I'm sorry, I interrupted. But, oh, your second point, though.
No, I mean, I wasn't dealing with the liberalism part. It was just the rest of that sentence. What Lenny seems to be saying is that, no, this really doesn't have anything to do with that at all. It's political beliefs and human behavior, and so, but he didn't really get into why people, he's just saying these are their human action and political beliefs. He doesn't say why they are. I mean, he's saying it's not economic, it's political, but why is it political? And I think, or why is it happening now? And it seems to me like you have to bring in the backlash.
Well, the backlash theory, but also the fact that he says in his point that racism and anti-Semitism are the essential factors in the development of the far right in this period. And stated another way, what he says speaks more to the endurance and resurgence of white supremacy than the collapse of the forces opposing white supremacy. I'm not sure if I said that right. So he talks about the collapse of liberalism, but liberalism per se never really opposed white supremacy. It wanted to manage it, but not
reform,
oppose it.
Yeah. It's always about reform.
Right. Yeah. Whereas what came up in opposition to white supremacy are strong social movements to which there's now the backlash.
Yeah.
See, I guess it's instead of it being a 1-2, I see it as a 1-2-3.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, the 1-2 that most sociologists, most society describes is that there's the social movements and then there's a backlash. That's the 1-2 punch. We're saying, no, there's white supremacy, then there's the movement to oppose white supremacy, then there's the reinsurgence of white supremacy. You know, because without stating what was there before the social movement, there's the denial of the effect of
right.
The white supremacy. So it's, oh God, paradigm. I guess I have to, I'm practicing this language. Okay, I have to have some other comments. So let's keep on. I know y'all are.
You know, I think, I was just thinking, I think it would be really interesting if you, one of the things you do is lay out different conspiracies or myths. I think it's going to be key to lay out the different myths or conspiracies against African Americans, because in doing that, then we'll expose more of the, not just economic, but cultural, political, or social, or even religious, paranoias of white supremacists, and in turn, again, you're gonna then you're gonna see that will kick into some of just again mainstream whites our denial of those things. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? I think when he leaves those out, because at this point, sort of conspiracies, the way he's presenting conspiracies here, I feel like they're much more closer to the home than he's explained them.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like they're in our daily lives. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? But I think at this point, certainly the hardcore conspiracies of Jews, they're there. And I think you can see them much more readily through looking at hardcore white supremacists. But the conspiracies against African Americans, I think they're already readily in our lives. And in order to understand, you see what I'm saying?
The word I used was axiomatic when you said
right.
something close to that early. Conspiracies against...
And explaining... Because the point that I feel like that Marianne is trying to hit on is that he does say, okay, all of this is not economic, and he's saying, he's trying to say, again, he's trying to relate it to identity formation, though he has not laid it out, and you're going to have to do it for him. But, and in trying to tap into their psychological vulnerabilities, because that's what they do, right, if they're saying that there's a white genocide, and all those things that we named up, or that, you know, all the money in the government is going to be spent on welfare queen, right?
Mm-hmm.
If they're going to go through the psychological terror, if you want to call it that, I don't know. In doing that, then you have to break open the basic day-to-day conspiracies that are usually along black and white lines. You just can't get past that.
OJ was let go just because
exactly.
of black
dirt. Exactly.
That's a small day-to-day conspiracy. All black people are friends. They all know each other.
Right.
They'll never convict.
That's a good one. Or, you know, they have to converse. The Simi Valley jurors, because they were all white with one Latino guy, they let off the Rodney King cops. Actually, I used that.
Conspiracy of reverse discrimination.
That's right. Actually, in Montana this weekend, I actually dropped a bomb in my speech.
You have it on tape.
Really, in my speech, I asked her, so how many of y'all thought OJ was guilty and got off of it? So, nearly every head of the audience goes up, including my own. And then I said, well, I just have one word for y'all right now. Now you know how black folks felt after the Rodney King verdict. The system worked. Everybody was like, they sat there a minute trying to get it. I said, you know how outraged the entire city of Los Angeles was behind something that had videotape to prove it? I said, at least with the OJ thing, nobody was standing in a dark corner videotaping it. I'm sorry, that's a digression, but I enjoy dropping it. But I didn't say it quite that way. They got a big laugh out of it. But I also think they got some understanding out of it. Because compare it to our absolute disbelief as a country when Rodney King, when those cops and Rodney King got off.
Mm-hmm.
But then everybody was saying, well, the system worked. Anyway, moving right along. Conspiracy of reverse discrimination. There was another point. Hey. Okay, where is it? Claims. From the position of black people, specifically, there's a conspiracy in this country to avoid dealing with racism and white supremacy.
Yeah. That'd be the foundation.
Hmm?
Yeah. Yeah.
Right. Just a point that occurred to me when I was reading the paper the first time. Okay, any other thoughts on this? You had some little
cliff notes there. Yeah, I've written throughout it.
Can I borrow your copy? Or?
Yeah, or I can kind of highlight some of that. I think that, what you just said, would be a good place to start, because, I mean, if in general society is in denial of all the hate crimes that were committed through slavery, then the hate crimes that we document day to day are just mere tidbits.
Yeah.
And
the overreaction of a paranoid group of people.
When he was talking about trying to prove that, again, racism exists when there isn't economic stress. I mean, I think at any given historical moment, even today, both financially secure and insecure white people are racist. So I don't know why Marxists always have to fight that. You know what I mean? It should just be self-evident.
Because Marxism as the ideology cannot explain itself without resting everything on the economy.
I know, but I'm sorry that.
And that's the pitfall of Marxism.
But, you know, again, if he would just give, you know, even today, just examples of people that are completely financially secure but express their racism differently than working class white.
Yeah,
oh,
but they're just slicker about it, more polished with that. So, yeah, that's, I mean, one of the reasons I rejected Marxism back in the late 70s, early 80s, was that it offered no explanation for racism. It reduced racism as competition between the working class. And that's bullshit.
And it addresses women even less.
Oh, really? Really? And so, I mean, but at least there wasn't a women's movement that Marx and Engels could have studied. There was a movement for black freedom going on. So you kind of have to like ignore this one under your nose.
Right.
You know? And there was a women's movement. It was the first women's rights convention. It was 1848. Engels then did their work in 1870, so they actually could have. Yeah. And so that's one of the reasons that a lot of black people started going into Pan-Africanism, which borrowed from Marxism, but infused an analysis of racism into it. Any other comments? This has been very useful for me. I don't know if y'all got anything out of it, but I'm getting a lot. We need more of this, don't we?
I
got to
read it again and again. You know, I like this kind of reading.
Well, I'm going to challenge you to reproduce it very soon.
That will happen one day.
It's going to happen. It's going to happen. I just want to urge all y'all again to keep, you know, this as a sacred trust from Lenny, because he is very, yeah, I saw that. Everybody's got copy of me except mine. I need to put one on mine. But he really is sensitive about people ripping off his intellectual property and stuff. And, and it's not us, per se, but the reason he's quit to write his book, one of them, was that because he, for better than 10 years, had been giving out his intellectual ideas to other people who were writing books and getting a lot of acclaim for them. And so,
this is his turn.
And so he says this represents some critical thinking he's done for his book. And so he doesn't want the ideas that he's promoting out there, you know, in ways that are beyond his control. And he did say, which I should have told you at the front end of this, was that he stopped writing this for, similar to what you were saying, simply because he didn't want to reveal so much of his thinking in this paper. Now that doesn't excuse why he understated what he said he was going to do on racism, but at the same time, he could have continued with this deconstruction in a masterly way. So again, this makes me just wait till that book comes out. How did you like White Lies, White Power?
I don't read it. I just finished my other book.
What book is it?
Insomnia.
What?
It has nothing to do with
it. You have reading assignments. Stephen King was not on the list. Oh, how am I going to see y'all's political education with a little time left of me if y'all won't hear me?
I'm sorry.
Huh?
I'm sorry.
Okay. How far have you gotten on fascism?
Not very far.
Where your card is?
Probably. Like the first few pages.
Okay, y'all. I know it ain't fun, and it is work, but gotta be done. I mean, you know, between me, you, and the wall, Loretta's not gonna be here a lot longer to do the reading and interpretation. And that's what I have to.
I'll be showing up at the doorstep.
Hey, you're welcome to.
Loretta,
what the hell is this mean? Lenny, what the hell is this mean? We're all learning from him. And stuff, but I really want y'all to. They really turn up the speed on your extracurricular reading and stuff. Which is gonna happen anyway. I mean, but when you start doing the updates and stuff, but that's still just gonna be data. You know, the books of analysis, like Friendly Fascism, you know, stuff like this, you just gotta do. Because otherwise, you know, it'll be, and well, I,